The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender. Genders. Gender? Gender equality.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Womanity Project live. I'm Aurélie Harp, and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. It's Thursday, 11 a.m. Every week, you can take a little break with us. Every week, a guest is opening up and talk about them, their gender, equality, life. Every week, we open a conversation and we invite you to be part of it. Today, we're chatting with Brooklyn-based photographer, musician, chef, drink maker, and the founder, creative director, and lady boss at R&D Studios Bushwood, an art event production company. And a feminist, Diana Minow.
Hi.
Hi, Diana.
Can you just say that like every morning when I wake up?
Welcome to the Womanity Project.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And I said feminist because I met Diana at the Bitches Book Club that she's co-hosting each month. I'm very, very excited to have you today. And just so people know, today as well, we have a very special guest behind the set, Lydia Darley. Not only we interviewed Lydia in the Womanity Project season one, but now Lydia joined our team as a producer and filmmaker for the development of our documentary series. Diana, I introduced you as the founder, creative director, and lady boss at R&D Studio Bushwood. Can you tell us more about this?
Sure. Where to start? So it kind of started with, I guess, a dual vision of creating these events that had mixed arts in them. My background is as a composer and as a photographer secondarily. When I was in grad school for composition, I was going to one new music concert after the other. I don't know. I just get so sick of one thing at a time, one type of art at a time. It just seemed anachronistic to be around people who are just kind of doing one thing, but maybe not even doing that, who are just presenting one aspect of themselves. So there was that component. I was like, we need to mix this up. I want to see other artists. I want to see collaboration. I want to see nights that aren't just one thing, that have multi-dimensions and mixed art forms. I also have a strong, just from how I grew up, kind of food and drink background and entertaining background. So I had that component going as well. And then when I moved back to New York 4 years ago, post-grad school, I knew I wanted to do these nights. I wanted to start creating a community of people and a space where I would throw basically like a big art party, a salon. I love the idea as a French woman and having lived in Paris myself for a couple of years, the idea of a salon from the, you know, the 19th century and onward. Oh, usually it was a woman. Usually it was a wealthy woman, so that component's lacking. But like, you know, a woman would open her home and invite people from all different backgrounds and all different artistic persuasions and intellectual persuasions in, and they would eat and drink and share. And so I was like, I want to create my home or create a home, create a space that is both my home and a place where people can come and gather and where we can have these nights where there's different kinds of art going on, different kinds of artists and art lovers participating, and where there's food and drink. So it's the second Saturday of every month in the fall and the spring. This is what the events are now. Second Saturday salons. We just had Girls Gone Wild last month, which was our season opener. I have a corny, ridiculous sense of humor. Most of my ideas come from when I'm drinking and smoking with my friends. And I'm like, oh, you know, it'd be great. Girls Gone Wild, Women's History Month, Spring Break Edition. And that was, you know, how that came about. And so that was a big, big party. We had over 75 people, which is way too many for my loft. We raised a lot of money. This was the first year I decided, being in the political space that we're in these days and how so many different organizations need our help, and if nothing else, our moral support, particularly organizations that help women and disenfranchised people. I just called our local women's center, which is part of the HELP organizations, H-E-L-P and cap blocks. With an exclamation point. And we raised $550 with something. And coincidentally, Toya Coleman is the director over at the Women's Center of East New York. And when I called her and approached her with this in February, she was like, we actually just started an art therapy department. So this is like especially fortuitous. So the money is actually going directly to that particular program within the Women's Center, which we're very excited about. And I'm going to be going over there Friday morning to hand deliver the envelope.
Yes. Are you going to document that?
Yes. I think photos will be taken and shared.
Yeah, because you're a photographer as well.
I am a photographer as well. Yeah, I was just shooting another feminist event this past weekend, the Ashley Bowder Project. She's one of the principal dancers with the New York City Ballet. And she partnered with a jazz organization, the Jazz Harmonic, which I'm on the board of because I met a friend and Ron Wasserman, who's the director of it. And he's like, you got to join up. And so this was a 2-night program where female composers and female choreographers collaborated. You can find me on all the Instagram accounts. That's probably the easiest way, and that will direct you to websites. So R&D Studios Bushwood, which is all the art events that we were just talking about, the Second Saturday Salons. Then there's Diana Mina Photography. Then there's my baking company, Mama D's Tasty Treats. And then a few other things. The Bitches Books and Brunch Club, which is how we met. That's actually, I do that with my best friend and partner, Lonya Lanan. She's the one who curates the books, and I do the brunch component as Mama D.
I tasted it. And as a French, I have to say, I had right. a quiche that was fabulous. The bread was fabulous. It was really cool. So
Thank you.
And again, I'm just going to say it because you're very humble, but you're a very prolific artist. And no, of course you have many, many websites because it seems that you have a great idea all the time. And I would like to talk a little bit more about the Mama D Tasty Treats.
Mama D's Tasty Treats. Yeah.
Yeah.
Guess how that name came about? Also from a night of drinking with friends. Yeah. Basically, all the different projects I do, maybe aside from my music and photography, which are more about my own personal expression, I was thinking about this today earlier because I was like, oh God, she's going to ask me questions about what the hell I'm doing. I don't know how to talk about it. But they're ways of empowering people, which makes sense when I think about myself and how I've always felt as a woman, a type A leader, you know, woman who's trying to get shit done, and how I always felt like, just like I had boots on my neck the whole time, various kinds of boots. I try to do things that are going to be tides that lift other boats. So the R&D Studios Bushwood thing is, you know, artists who are completely disenfranchised from commerce. Usually we don't usually make much money off of our art. So it's like creating a community of or creating a space and a place, an opportunity to share for artists. And then with Mama D's Tasty Treats, the whole vision of that eventually will be a wholesale bakery with a little storefront. And our employment model will be very much about employing people who are typically, quote unquote, unemployable based on how our society works. So people with past criminal records. I'm starting a GoFundMe for that in the next few weeks to get some new gear for the new space that we're moving into. Hopefully to find an investor or a couple investors to make this a proper bakery with a soul. I want this to be a bakery with a heart.
Where are you going to be based? Where can we find you? The GoFundMe campaign in 2 weeks.
So where are we based? I'm so glad you asked this. Why are we called R&D Studios Bushwood? I live at the Halsey stop in Bushwick. It's essentially right on the border of Ridgewood, Queens. So I was like, we're going to call it Bushwood. So it's Bushwick and Ridgewood. We are moving to the house, which is going to be like R&D Studios Bushwood 2.0. And that's right in Ridgewood. It's a 10-minute walk to the April 8th salon. It's going to be there. And that's our christening of the space, so to speak.
And just the GoFundMe campaign will find...
Go to MamaD'sTastyTreats.com.
You're a feminist.
Oh, yeah.
You, what is your definition of feminism?
It's people are all equal, period, in value. And, you know, to me, calling myself a feminist is the same thing right now as saying Black Lives Matter. It's not anti-men. I hate when people try to couch this term as anti-something. It's not at all about that. It's about the fact that half of the world's population, women, are completely discriminated against in almost every society, except maybe Sweden. And I don't even feel comfortable saying that because I'm sure if I lived in Sweden, I could find something that would piss me off. So, you know, to say feminism these days is to say, yes, this is a problem we need to draw attention to. So, yeah, I'm a feminist. I say it loud and fucking proud.
Yeah, bitches.
Yeah. Please.
You know.
You've listening to the Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. We've been talking with photographer, musician, chef, and lady boss, Diana Mino. And it's now time to take the Womanity Project questionnaire. Are you game?
Sure.
So you started talking a bit about yourself, but can you tell us more where you're from?
So I grew up about 40 minutes north of Philadelphia, so about 2 hours from New York City, in what I refer to as the rural suburbs. Not very diverse, relatively affluent, pretty. I love going back and visiting my folks who still live in the same house because it's like the country, and it's a nice change from New York City when you're about to lose your mind at the end of March and it's 30 degrees outside and you're like so pasty and miserable and you just want to go to a beach. It's nice to at least go out and see some trees. I'm primarily Italian American. A couple generations off the boat, though. I think my mom's side of the family, her dad was from the South and was Italian. So she was first generation. And then my dad's side, his dad was Italian, born in America, but his brothers were born in Italy. And his mom was like the white one. Her family was just like all the white things that had been here forever. So like I think it's like Scottish, Welsh, and German, just like other European things. But they'd been here for many generations already. I'm the eldest of three children. I went to NYU for my undergrad. Then I moved to Paris for 2 years. Then I came back and I moved to Austin, Texas for grad school. And then I moved back to New York 4 years ago, which I guess is 2013. And now I am in New York officially and permanently.
And why did you choose New York?
I don't know. I think it was always going to happen. I remember when I got into my colleges in high school and I was like, you know, debating, am I going to go to GW and do politics? Am I going to go to Boston and do law? I'm supposed to be one of those people. I grew up around professionals. I am the weirdest person from where I come from, as far as they're all concerned. Like, talk about a black sheep. When I got into the schools, I was like, I think I'm going to go to New York. And all of my teachers, as soon as I said that, just were like, yeah, of course you are. Like, it was like they knew better than I did at that point, because I guess between my artistic inclinations and sensibilities, despite like the fact that I probably would have made a kick-ass lawyer, and I wish I had a law degree, particularly at this time. Yeah, I think New York was just going to always be home. And, you know, I challenged that. I was like, let me move abroad. I want to try living in Europe. Let me live in a different part of the country. And, of course, as soon as I moved to Austin, and this is not in any way meant a thing against Austin specifically, but as soon as I got to Austin, I realized I needed to be back in New York.
What gender do you identify with?
I identify as a woman. I have to say I've never been one who really cares much about labels. Like that I'm such a, that I like brandish my feminist, you know, press pass or whatever the hell, my pin, so willfully is kind of an exception to me, or exception for me, because I usually don't like labels. I find them a kind of pointless enterprise. Oh, I'm this, I'm that. I mean, I understand it as an exercise in helping to form your identity. For me, it's more of a process than anything else, like a critical thinking device. But in terms of like what I ascribe to, I mean, I'm probably queer if I really think about it, because God knows I'm very much immersed in the LGBTQ community. All my friends are fucking weirdos in every possible way, including their sexual proclivities. I probably am a huge weirdo in terms of my sexual proclivities to people, to other people. So, I mean, and I just like the word queer because of its kind of sexual identity terminology or definition. But then as a term, it's also means kind of like just odd.
And what are the attributes you would use to define being a woman?
Oppression. I think in terms of my experience as a woman, so I mentioned I grew up in kind of like an affluent white as friggin' rural suburbs, you know, Bucks County, Philadelphia. Oh, I hated it. It was just suffocating. It was so boring. I knew it wasn't real life. I knew it was just like one thing, one note. But as a female growing up there, again, who's like very opinionated, very smart. Sorry.
Why sorry?
Yeah. I don't like being a braggart, but yeah, like I'm fucking smart. I'm good at certain things. I'm really bad at certain things too, let's be honest. But like, you know, I'm a type A person and I'm a leader. I mean, I've realized this in the last few years just in thinking about feminism and thinking about myself and my trajectory as a person and why I'm doing all the things I'm doing and making, and not just being a friggin' lawyer and like, you know, getting my salary and doing a good job at that, which is, you know,
totally admirable as well. Like why I'm trying to create my own path. And instead of my kind of set of skills, like what I bring to the table being encouraged as a young person, always, always squelched. Like I'm a smartass. I had like, why do you think it's called Girls Gone Wild? It's because I'm like, I'm ridiculous. I think it's, you know, my salon. But like, you know, instead of that being encouraged or instead of adults in my life as a young child, identifying the fact that what I was really trying to do and being a snarky little kid was find my comedic voice because I love being funny and I love funny people. Like all of my friends are funny because life is hard and I need to laugh. I'm going to speak for you for a second early, but we like to laugh. You need that really. We appreciate humor. You appreciate the absurdity in things, right? So like that's an example. I was also told as a little kid, I mean, I remember being at a dinner table with my parents' friends, you know, which happened a lot. My parents were always good about letting us be at the table with the adults. There was no like kids' table except when there were too many people around, which did happen often because Italian American. They would tell me, I remember my mom's friends being like, I'd be like, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be this. I want to be that. I want to do this. And I'd be like, I don't want to make my own money. And then I just remember them saying things like, oh, well, you don't have to worry about that. You're going to get married and your man will pay for it. And I'm so happy. This is like something I take pride in retroactively. My immediate reaction was always like kind of like, fuck you. I didn't say that when I was six. I said that when I was 10. But no, when I was six, I said, no. No, I'm going to make my own money. I just was defiant. That's so insulting. What do you mean? Someone else? You're basically saying that I'm not capable of doing that, or I'm not supposed to do that, or there's no place for me to do that. And I find all of those answers disgusting and unacceptable. Don't tell me what I'm going to do. People would look at me like, oh, you're supposed to be more ladylike. You're not supposed to swear. And like, I don't know, middle fingers up all the way. I just didn't give a fuck. And I was always going to be who I was going to be. And I guess that, you know, like that's kind of, if I had to pick a trait about myself that I'm grateful for, I mean, I didn't make this. This is just like part of my personality. I'm grateful for that trait because it's probably the thing that's kept me persevering and like, just not giving a fuck when people tell me I can't do something. Just being like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do what I want to do. And I'm going to do it well. And you can just like regret your statement later. I love that. I know. What a bitch, right? So you can imagine how that went over in rural Pennsylvania. You know, like that kind of attitude. It was like, no. So there was no leadership skills were ever encouraged. I was bossy, right? It wasn't like, oh, yeah, okay, we're identifying this young child, like, things that are really good. She's like, you know, she's got strong opinions. She's very smart. You know, she's trying to, instead of that and encouraging that and developing that in a constructive, productive way that would have very, I'm sure, much earlier in my life, I'm going to be 34 in a couple of weeks, and I'm just kind of now. Imagine I hadn't been discouraged or I hadn't had these, like, negative seeds planted in my head about every aspect of my badassness. Think of how much more productive I would have been as a human being years ago and how much more I would have already gotten done. And who knows what that would have mean. You think about people, all sorts of people, again, going back to all the different kinds of disenfranchisement and oppression of types of people in this world. And what we're really doing is just squelching the richness of life and productivity. I mean, if you want to take a capitalist bottom line stance on this, we're squelching productivity. Because who knows how many businesses I would have had already and how many jobs and how many people would be empowered. And, you know, I'm just one person. Think of all the people we do this to and all the subtle ways. Just keeping people down. Keeping people down for whatever bullshit, anachronistic reason.
And who is your biggest female influence in the woman you'd like to thank?
I think women who really inspired me when I was growing up, although I didn't realize it, I think Oprah being on the TV all the time. I didn't like watch Oprah, but, you know, it would be on. My babysitters would watch it when I was like really young. My mom always worked, so I was always with babysitters. And I didn't even appreciate, like, not only is she a woman who has this empire that she's built herself, but she's a Black woman who has this. Like, I didn't even appreciate the social, the power of that and the social context of that. But I'm sure that got in my head. I mean, my mom also is an MBA. She ran my dad's medical practice her whole life. So that my mom was a working woman with an advanced degree, I'm sure that very much conveyed to me that it's normal for a woman to work. Not all of my friends' parents who were sitting around telling me that my husband would do that eventually and take care of me
had jobs. Some of them did. Some of them just had them for fun to meet husbands, you know. So I don't know. There's so many women. I mean, right now, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, I think right now we are in such a moment of emergence in terms of powerful women who are just like, fuck this. There's so many women starting businesses and fighting the system right now. It's a very inspiring time to be a woman, despite, oh my God, talk about a blow. I feel like, you know, to be a woman is to just to take a blow after blow, wind just being knocked out of your sails. That's kind of what I mean by the oppression. And it's not just for women. It's, you know, we experience that in all different forms if you're someone who's not just part of the power structure, right? We're starting to help each other. We're putting wind in each other's sails right now. It's like, you know, you're raised also to think, this is a huge thing that a lot of women are finally talking about, which is super important. We're raised as women to be pitted against each other. I can't remember how many times, again, as a young girl, oh, well, you know, women are just so catty with each other. Ugh, you know, like women are really, and this is something I was told. This isn't something I was observing as a young girl who was just like a stupid kid, you know, like in school and playing. You know, you're told that germ of a bad, negative, destructive idea is put in your head. So that when you then are starting to be a young woman or a young girl interacting with other women, you feel like there's already this competitiveness that's already bred into you. That's completely destructive. And it's a way for us to keep each other down. It's a way for the fucking patriarchy, let's use the correct word here, to keep you down as a woman. I'm so happy. A big turning point in my life in the last 4 years and being back in New York and doing all these, starting all of these projects that are about empowerment and realizing that they're about empowerment is just a big turning point in my life in the last 4 years and being back in New York and doing all these, starting all of these projects that are about empowerment and realizing that they're about empowerment is just, I mean, I used to always have a lot of guy friends. I'm also kind of a tomboy and a smart ass. And a lot of women, again, aren't raised that way. So it was hard for me to find friends, female friends who were like this. And I have two younger brothers, so I didn't have a sister. And my mom's not particularly, like, I'm not very close with my parents in terms of emotions or worldviews or fucking anything. I never had a really tight female friendship to model future ones after. So, like, the last 4 years, just, I found so many amazing female friends. And I think we've kind of realized together, and it's all come to a head, of course, with this fucking election and now presidency, which makes me gag to even say that we have to support each other. And we're saying it. It's like, no, you know, the article that came out about a year ago about how women in Obama's White House, the way they figured out how to be heard, because that's still a fucking thing that we don't listen to women because ew or whatever, kill me. Like, just, I can't even. They said the way we do it is we support each other. If a woman has the floor, we make sure the other, you know, it's just, we have to help each other.
The amplifier, something. Yeah. You repeat amplifier. when you like what the person the woman just said before you, you repeat it at least 5 times to make sure until it's
drilled in their fucking heads. I call it the plow truck model, where it's just like, nope, you're not going to talk over me. And I will dump my idea on you until you're buried, because apparently that's what it takes. And I don't like that you have to do that. It would be very nice to not have to be, you know, beat an idea into someone's head. But it still has to happen sometimes. I'm starting to get up to a place in my communities of people where, like, people do listen to me. And it's something I've always observed, how, you know, when I was younger, people just wouldn't listen to me. And it's like I had to, like, scream, so to speak, not actually scream, but yeah, a little bit, you know, just I had to fight to make my voice heard. And more I hear, I realize people kind of hear me. They sit back and listen a little bit more, men included. And I think we have to just very actively strive for that. And we have to use that model that the women in the White House, Obama's White House, said, which is just help amplify each other.
Amplify. Thank you so much, Diana,
Thank you,
really.
This is so fun. Oh.
You've been listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. You can like us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Womanity Project. You can support us and sponsor us on our page, radiofreebrooklyn.com/thewomanityproject. We don't have any advertising. We really rely on people's support. So yay to that. Every dollar counts. A special thank you today to our producer, director, Lydia Dali, who filmed us, Lizzie Axtett, who composed our music, and of course, Radio Free Brooklyn. Tune in next week, The Womanity Project, on Radio Free Brooklyn, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Au revoir, tout le monde! À la semaine prochaine. Is there a power song that you listen to? It can be one of yours or another artist where you listen to the song and it makes you feel strong or happy or great.
I would like to thank you, Arjuna, because I think this project is so rad. We're doing the same thing, you know? Like, you're bringing women together. You're making their voices heard, literally, on your radio program. And it's just, it's an inspiration. I'm so glad I met you. And, yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You're very, very welcome.